ka flesje na kaarte, mira hele ra agamsa, o part o krokig, a ka raliv, teaite na winchiv, slan riv, galeir.
Yeah. Of course, that was recorded live from Crow Park in Dublin, Ireland. I want to welcome a very good friend of ours indeed, and probably one of the best known sports, and particularly in Gaelic sports, advocates who ever came out of Ireland. He did so in 1985. And Larry McCarthy, indeed, you're very welcome to the program.
Good morning, Adrian. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Let's start, because I know that not only New York, but indeed in GAA circles throughout the United States, for that matter, throughout the world, the former chairman of New York GAA, Seamus Dooley, passed away, and the announcement was made here yesterday. An amazing character, and somebody you knew very, very well indeed.
Oh, an absolutely amazing character, and there's no doubt that there's a dark shadow of the New York GAA this weekend with that announcement, and obviously our condolences first and foremost to his lovely daughter Amanda, and to his two grandsons, and to his son-in-law Mike, and indeed to his family based in Ireland, back in Monaghan. Well, his brothers and sisters are spread all over the country, but there's no doubt that it's a huge loss to us, Adrian. There was a wonderfully evocative piece that Liam Birmingham wrote yesterday and put up on our Facebook page. And it encapsulated all that was good about Seamus Dooley. His heart of gold, his ability to, you know, his contribution over the years to the GAA. And, you know, while we might call him Mr. GAA, I prefer to call him Mr. Gaelic Park. And if you can love a place, I think it would be fair to say that Seamus Dooley loved Gaelic Park. He spent an inordinate amount of time in there. Before we put in the artificial surface, he was cutting the grass, he was lining the field, he was putting out the flags. And even when we put in the artificial surface 13 years ago now, you would still find him down there tidying up, fixing stuff, taking care of the place. And in the dark nights and the dark days of COVID over the last number of months, since the lockdown in March, I guess, he would always go for his daily exercise down there. He would walk around the place. So I would call him Mr. Gaelic Park, and certainly he's a huge, huge loss to us, you know. And he was a wonderful character, a friendly character, a notorious character. absolutely, in terms of sort of, if he wanted to cause chaos, could cause chaos. But the most gregarious, outgoing guy with a heart of gold, in fairness, you know.
Yeah. He also, you know, was very much a part of something I'd like to talk about, and that is, you know, the decades of GAA, of New York GAA, plenty of conflicts along the way. It seemed like at least any reports coming out of the meetings in New York Gaelic Athletic Association, nobody ever complained that those meetings were boring. You know, it was there was plenty of room for diverse opinions, if we could do it. What was your own impression? You came here in 85. What was your own?
Well, my own impression of them, having been in many of those meetings, was that it was, you know, clubs fighting their corner in terms of perhaps fixtures, in terms of perhaps, you know, players that might need protection. And what do I mean by that? Perhaps appeals of players might have been dismissed from the field and wouldn't be able to play the following week in an upcoming match. And it goes to the passion of the people involved. They were, you know, quite intent on making sure that their club was going to be represented and well represented. and wasn't going to be steamrolled in any way. So you're right that there was a diverse range of opinions. But I mean, and I'm not uncertain that it wouldn't be any different from an awful lot of other county boards around the world, you know.
Yeah.
But clubs go in and fight their corner. We have a unique setup here, obviously, because of the relationship with the O'Donnell family historically.
Right.
And the sort of the presence of the old man, as they said.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you know,
John Kerry.
Yeah, John Kerry, exactly. And his influence on the running of Gaelic Park and subsequently on the running of the New York GEA. So people might have seen that as part of the discussion, shall we say.
Mm.
But I mean, the arguments and the discussions and the lively discussions that we would have had over the years are nothing different, I don't think, from what other county boards have, you know. But I mean, we pay so much attention to it out here because we are out here. And so any rumors or any stories or any arguments that go on arguably get magnified in our community. And as a consequence, everybody knows about them. So,
yeah.
I mean, they wouldn't be as magnified, I don't think, in county boards in Ireland,
yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah, I have to go out of my way here since it is well acknowledged that if I were writing a book on sports or the Gaelic Athletic Association, it would contain two paragraphs on page one. But I would like to point out, though, that I played in Gaelic Park for about 8 or 9 years. Now, it wasn't out on the field. It was on the bandstand with Mickey Carton and John O'Neill and whatever. And we were very well respected indeed, because at that time, you know, a small little stage there, two windows, be sweating bullets. The floor would be empty. We would be playing there, everybody, you know, out on the field and so forth, and we'd attract attention, particularly, you know, with the teenagers who were coming around, maybe throw the paper plates in the window at us and something else. It was a great experience. But anyway, I wanted to shove that in lest anybody would think that I know nothing about sports.
Well, hold on. No, you said you were there not to play sports, but you were playing music.
Music.
So that doesn't knock your argument back in.
Oh, no. Well, now that's coming from the new chairman of the Gaelic Athletic Association. God, I thought I might get a little bit of a break, but obviously I'm in the wrong place. Tell us, you know, about your winning an election, you know, which it makes you the GAA president. Here you are, you're from Cork, you're living in New Jersey, a professor at Seton Hall, and then you win. Though very, very few people thought that an immigrant, very much a part of the Irish diaspora, would in fact win a term. It's for 3 years, and then I'd like be a fly on the wall when you know your wife Barbara. And, you know, your two grown sons, Shane and Connor, and your grandkids said, my God, congratulations. How are you going to run that from New Jersey? And you had to say, actually, it's not going to be run from New Jersey. How did that go over?
Well, I suppose reasonably well, in so much as I got elected. But when I was canvassing, when I was visiting county boards in Ireland and indeed around the world, my introductory remarks were always that there might be many, many reasons why people would not vote for me. But I always said, please don't let the fact that I'm based in America at the moment be one of those. Because if I am elected, I will take leave of absence from Seton Hall and I will move to Ireland. And so I was able to convince people of that. Mm-hmm. And I'm in the throes, actually, of trying to buy accommodation in Dublin at the moment, Barbara and myself, so that I can move over there in January on a full-time basis and take up the position at the end of February. At the moment, I am the president-elect. In February at the GAA Congress, I become the president. So people accepted my bona fides, I suppose, in terms of saying that to them. And then, you know, the election obviously went well. But it meant traveling an inordinate amount of time for the first 2 months of 2020. I mean, the 8 weekends between the 1st of January and the 28th of February, I was in Ireland every weekend. Mm. And there's absolutely no truth in the rumour, Adrian, that on the following Thursday evening after the election, that United Airlines called and said, where are you? Can the plane take off from Dublin, for Dublin, because you're not on it? Absolutely no truth in it. Look, people accepted that, and, you know, I was lucky enough.
You didn't give me much support when I said that, you know, that I had a great track record in playing in Gaelic Park. You don't expect me to jump in now and help you out.
No, I don't. No. Absolutely not.
Larry, You're talking about what some, you know, you may have thought, and some of your supporters and your family might have thought that, you know, that this was perhaps not going to happen for the very reasons that you have underlined. Outside of Ireland, somebody, an immigrant, somebody who obviously knew and contributed to GAA, to sports, but again, you're elected. But you were elected at a time when the world started to fall apart. The coronavirus, COVID-19. Pandemic all came crashing just about the time that you were elected. What and how much realization was there for Gaelic Athletic Association sports worldwide that in fact this was going to be, you know, something? The unknown, of course, it was unknown for in every area, but sports in particular seemed to have taken, you know, the stage at that point, saying, well, you know, for openers, let's just close down all sports. It's a contact sport. It's one thing. How did you and, you know, obviously your team around the world, what was the reaction to that?
Well, we had to adhere to all of the public health guidelines, Adrian, around the world. And obviously we were disappointed because sport for so many people is part and parcel, a significant portion of their lives and their existence. And I think you see a lot of that now in Ireland at the moment with the fact that the GAA is running the championship and we'll have an All-Ireland final on the 13th of December. We'll have another one on the 19th of December. Obviously strange times. But I mean, we were extremely disappointed, but we had to adhere to the guidelines. We did that. And then slowly but surely, we've come back out of it and brought back sport, playing sport, even if not attending sport. And I'm sure there's lots of people stuck to the radios and stuck to their televisions and yes. stuck to their computers this morning watching the Ulster Championship and the playoffs and the hurling, for instance, and more matches tomorrow. And then locally here, under the leadership of John Henchy, the New York board got back once we were allowed by the New York State to have games. But, I mean, I think given the circumstances that we're in, sport has been a light and, you know, will continue to be a light because it gives us something to be enthused about in these somewhat depressing times, you know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's when the election took place last February, we had no idea what was going. You're right. We had absolutely no idea what was going to happen and how it was going to turn out. Mm. And it has been awful, obviously, you know, not only for sport, but for for the world in general.
Yeah.
And while we're getting the GAA championship played this year, now we're facing into another unprecedented year because we don't know what the public health guidelines will be in Ireland, and we don't know what the public health guidelines will be around the world. We're just hoping that we will get games played again. And it's a bit eerie, actually, to be watching
the last couple
of weeks with nobody at them, you know.
Let me go back,
if you wouldn't mind, Eddie, to Seamus. It was lovely on the part of the Ulster Council this morning to have a minute silence for Seamus at their championship match between Donegal and Armagh. Prior to the match, there was a minute silence, and the match was played in Clonus, in Monaghan, mm-hmm. which is Seamus' native place. So our gratitude, and I'm sure gratitude on behalf of Amanda as well, to the Ulster Council for doing that. But it goes to the, I suppose, how well-known Seamus was and well-loved Seamus was in all parts of the GAA world that happened.
Also, and kind of coincidental that, the game in Clonus in Clonus, on native county Monaghan. Just on that, is there a general acknowledgement, or is it mostly tongue-in-cheek when people outside of Ireland say, you know, Ireland and a united Ireland would of course, be amazing, terrific, and for the first time looks like it actually could be real. But if you're in Ireland itself, sports in particular are very parochial, and before we even talk about that, I have to say that, for instance, I'm from Mayo, which most people don't know, but Mayo is playing Galway tomorrow, in the Connacht final. And from there, hopefully, we'll go on to win the Sam Maguire. But anyway, that's another story.
You can dream, Adrian. You can dream.
Where's Cork? All right.
Well, hold on a second. Let's get back to that now. Cork, as you know, undoubtedly, beat Kerry last Sunday. And we play Tipperary next week. You play Galway, and you play Galway tomorrow. Mm. And if both of us should win, we will meet in the All-Ireland semi-final. So you and I will have a little wager if we get that far.
Ooh, okay. You said a little wager, right?
I said a little wager. We'll buy, if Mayo win, I'll buy you dinner. If Cork win, you'll buy me dinner.
Well, if Cork win, of course, I won't be able to buy a dinner because you'll have to wait until there's outdoor dining again.
But patience is not something that's lacking in the GAA.
but it does come down to good, healthy competition at every level. And again, when we say parochial, you take each parish and parishes, particularly that has developed more over the years, or at least has been recognized over the years, that there's no shortage of interest in Gaelic athletic sports, and that can that translates, and it's transferred to places throughout the world. Look at the interest Irish-American kids have in football, in hurling, in camogie, in sports in general. It is something that is not a hard sell for those who have, families who have participated in sports, for generations. It's it's not amazing, but it's great to see that level of interest.
Undoubtedly is, but you could make the point that all sport is local, Adrian, because even if you take people in America, American kids born and who had nothing to do with Ireland at all, and you'll ask them what teams do they follow, inevitably they follow teams from their own city or their own state or something like that. So there's a passion, for instance, for Georgia football in Georgia. There's a passion for the Philadelphia Eagles in Philadelphia. And we're a manifestation of that in terms of local interest in Ireland. And that's what makes us different, I think, because we have tentacles in the community everywhere around the world. And you saw that in the COVID situation where we helped out in so many places. But we are local. We are the people of the parish. We are the people of the locality. And so there's an interest in seeing that. There's an interest in seeing your own play. And that's what makes the GA arguably different from every other sport organization. And you always play with your own. I mean, no matter how big you become in terms of being a star, you're still playing with your club or you're playing with your county. And I think the two words that are important there are your. Whereas if you're in another sport, for instance, let's say you happen to be a very, very good basketballer, you wouldn't, and you were born and reared in New York, you wouldn't necessarily be playing in New York because of the structure of the sport. I mean, that's the essence of the GEA. It's that it's you, or it's us, and it's ours. We're representing us, and that's why it's the interest is so passionate. And you're right, no matter where we go across the world, we carry that interest. And look at the clubs that are the clubs that have been strong here over the years. You know them all.
Sure.
You know, we say Waterford or Westmeath or Donegal or Cork or Sligo, for instance. It's all where we came from. And the majority of the people who are associated with those clubs would be from those counties, you know. Historically, there was no crossover, really. There is a bit more crossover now today's world. But, I mean, it's... That's what makes the GA different. It's about representation of yourself and your family and your parish and your community.
For, just again to double back, for many decades, and of course Seamus Dooley would have had very strong opinions, that in the new position that you are undertaking as president of the GAA worldwide, there was quite a bit of, again, controversy with respect to the GAA in Ireland kind of dictating and sometimes cross-acting, clubs and sports in general in America and say this is the way you're supposed to do it. Was that a rocky period, and what was the result of that?
No, it wasn't. I mean, no, I suppose the GA has a structure, and if you want to be part and parcel of it, no matter where you are in the world, you're going to adhere to that sort of structure. And there are rules and regulations, and you have to abide by them. But our relationship with Croke Park and over the last 20 years or so has been excellent in terms of their understanding that units outside of Ireland, boards outside of Ireland, are different and operate in different circumstances.
But are they subject to
flexibility? Flexibility in terms of our ability to run our own show locally.
Yeah.
Are we subject to the official guide of the GAA? Absolutely, not really. We are. But then we go to Congress or we go to Central Council, for instance, if we have a particular circumstance that might work in Ireland but doesn't particularly work here, well, then we negotiate with them or we have conversations with them. And they're most amenable to us in all fairness. And obviously the J1 students, that wonderful program has been going for so many years, there had to be some accommodation on both sides for that. So that young men and now young women coming out to America could play Gaelic games for the summer. Because not only is it coming out to play Gaelic games, but it's also obviously an educational experience. And so we were able to negotiate and accommodate so that we each team would have a number of these people and say to Croke Park, well, this is what we want. And they said, fine, okay, let's put that into regulation.
Yeah. You mentioned there... visiting sports people who are coming out here on a visa. J1 visa allows those from Ireland to come out on a working and a temporary working visa. Now, there has been obviously has to be a recognition that with the tightening of the immigration laws and the, you know, some would say, an onslaught of recently, where the word immigrant turns out to be, you know, a word to raise the shackles. The players here, and there are many who, through no fault of their own, lack, you know, documentation, at least up until now. Hopefully that will change very soon. But where, in fact, some of the great players, again, not just in Gaelic Park, but across the United States, were unable, for instance, to travel to Ireland. Also, great players in Ireland were refused even temporary relief through, from, you know, being absolved, as it were, to come to the United States. And that has that rattled, the recent problems with respect to, players from both sides being subject to severe restrictions?
Well, the recent sort of restriction on visas and the availability of visas certainly has impacted the GAA in terms of young people being able to travel. And there's not a great desire, I don't think, on the behalf of a lot of people to come to the US in the last number of years. And so the number of J1 students that we have seen has decreased. They seem to be going other parts of the world when they take off for the summer. And clearly, the political scenario here in the United States at the moment hasn't been welcoming of immigrants, at least in the immediate past. But it has, yeah. We've seen a certain decrease in the number of people who are coming in as J1 students for the summer. And go back to, we have a process, we call it sanctions, summer sanctions. We would usually get a couple of hundred every summer. I think we got 3 this summer. Now, that was a combination of COVID, obviously, but it was also added into that was the restriction on people being able to access visas and come to the U.S.
There is expectation, of course, that you as a president, a global president for, the Gaelic Athletic Association, that from once, and, you know, considering you come from Bishopstown, New York, and you needed to get out of there to come to New Jersey, and now you're going to come back and be, sorry?
I'm laughing. I needed to get out of Bishopstown, and then you said I needed to get out of New York to New Jersey.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Well, no, you needed to get out of Bishopstown to New Jersey. Yeah. Excuse me. I have a group of people around here giving me a hard time about that. Okay. Bishopstown County Cork. Time for for McCarthy to leave. He wound up in New Jersey for reasons best known to himself, snubbed New York, and now might be going back and be a dub. I mean, how is that going to, how is that going to go over? And are you going to remember, not the Tagine Dohe, but are you going to remember that you have a special relationship with, the Gaelic Athletic Association in New York?
I'll quote a gentleman called Robert Lowry, who was a young man who was involved in the New York GA for a number of years. And professionally, he got posted to the Middle East about 4 years ago. And he wrote to the board, said, thank you very, very much for me being involved and all the pleasure I got out of it. And he said, my heart will always be close to 240th and Broadway. I have to say the exact same thing. I don't think you can take my heart away from 240th and Broadway in terms of Gaelic Park and the New York GAA. But obviously with an accent like this, I'm not going to be able to deny I'm from Cork, Adrian.
Yes.
Even though I will live in Dublin, but I am married to a Dublin woman. And I spent a number of years working in Dublin before I came to the United States, and I came to the United States to do graduate work. And one thing led to another, and I ended up staying here, obviously. And the reason I'm in New Jersey, Adrian, is for professional reasons. A university here offered me a job, and as I look out the window chatting to you this morning now, I can see where I work. So my commute is about 60 yards. Hence, it makes it easy to get out here, obviously. Go back to the serious note. I mean, my GEA credentials come from New York. That's where I learned the game of being an administrator. That's where I learned how to survive in terms of the politics of the GEA, shall we say.
Yeah.
And that's my calling card. And know my heart will always be close to 240 and Broadway, I think.
I want to, again, thank you for joining us. And I know that Seamus Dooley would be more than pleased that indeed he would be missed so badly. Very, very few people were able to put their heart and soul and indeed contribute at whatever level without ever looking for any credit for it. Obviously, we join you, in sending condolences to the Dooley family. All right. I was going to play.
Thank you, Adrian.
Thank you very much. I was going to play Moonlight in Mayo, but that would be
the Banks of My Own Lovely League as your.
No. I wouldn't. How about The Boys from the County Cork? Would that do you?
That'll do.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay.
Good morning, Adrian.
All right. Again, thank you. And friends, you are listening to Irish Radio Network, USA, irishradio.com, worldwide, The Flannelly Show, live from New York. And for Larry McCarthy, maybe we'll get a Corkonian to sing The Voice in the Country. Yeah, Glenn Curtin.
You find in history's pages.